Welcome back to this.
This is season two. We're back in season two of The Hero's Path.
That's so true.
Where we talk about directs.
Nintendo just keeps directing, and we keep watching.
And we keep on reacting, and sometimes we can even react to our own reactions.
That sounds fake. I don't believe in that action economy.
I guess we'll find out.
Only one reaction per turn, but there is a new turn beginning in 2025. And that gives us the opportunity to go back in time to all the other... We want to talk about the previous directs because we keep saying stuff in this direct... quote unquote coverage. And then it's, I imagine the listener saying, oh yeah, Ryan probably played and enjoyed that game. And we're going to find out that no, that didn't happen.
Spoilers.
So let's turn back the clock. That's the noise of a clock going backwards. To June of 2021, when there was a direct. Remember?
That's what I remember from 2021.
Yeah, there was a direct. We got to learn about, I'm looking at the list here, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy and Strange Brigade.
I re-listened to this one, and this is when the era when my audio was really bad. So don't go re-listen to this podcast, folks.
What was worth reacting to? Zach, there was a game you wanted to talk about.
I rewatched all these this week in preparation for talking about it in your ears right now. And it was really funny in June of 2021 when they had to get out in front and say, okay, everybody, we're not talking about Metroid Prime 4 today. It's still coming. But also check this out. And then they showed Metroid Dread. And I lost it. You know, spoilers for today's discussion, we're probably going to talk about Metroid Prime 4 some more, a game that is now more real than it was in 2021. And that made me start thinking and having conversations about Dread again. And I'm like, man, I really like Metroid Dread. It's like...
Have you played it more than once?
No, not more than once yet. But looking at footage again... And talking to it with people this week, that game's got it. That game's good. I should play that game again. Actually, what's happened in the intervening years is I liked Dread so much that I went and played all of Mercury Steam's Castlevania games. Which are bad, and then bad, and then somehow kind of good. They made three of those. And somehow that third one, despite being built off of two bad games, I kind of liked that one. That one was kind of all right. I'm assuming that they must be working on another Metroid game or something that, like, they will not announce this year because they cannot put it up against... You can't put two Metroid games in the same room. It's a bad look.
Yeah, yeah.
So I bet they're working on something that'll get dropped next year pretty quick. It'll be like
Do you think they'll remake Super Metroid? Oh my gosh, why did I say that? That's 20 minutes of podcast.
Maybe. No. I think we had this discussion, I think, last time where I was like, Super Metroid or Metroid Fusion or something, probably. Or that maybe they'll do another Metroid 2 remake. That'd be really funny. They should just keep remaking that game.
Yeah.
Metroid Dread is great. I also haven't played Metroid Dread more than once, but I know I'll get around to it.
It's just fantastic. Long. Like, I've played Fusion and Zero Mission many times since then, because those games are like 3 hours long each.
Fusion doesn't seem 3 hours long.
It's not three, it's like four or five, but that's still like nothing compared to playing Dread for 20 hours. The gulf between those times is just huge for... weird reasons. But anyways, that's...
I wonder if I'm bad at Metroid Fusion. Well, it'll be bigger when Mercury Steam remakes it. Anything else from June 2021?
I was laughing really hard on the June 2020 Run Direct because I said they will never put Xenoblade X on Switch, which they like just did like a month ago, finally.
Well, you were close. That was a long time.
Had they waited a little longer, it might have been a Switch 2 thing, and then I would have been right by default, so.
Oh.
I think that's all that's worth talking about that I haven't already talked about in that direct. So we should probably move ahead in time to September of 2022.
In September of 2022, we found out that the game Tunic was coming to the Switch. And on that podcast, did I say, oh yeah, I'm going to play this game? Or what happened?
You said it with the exact intonation of, yeah, I'm going to play this game. And you got really excited.
Tunic is fantastic. Really great. And it's the kind of thing that you don't want to spoil. Sarah, did you get a chance to look at Tunic?
No, it's still on my list.
Okay. That is one case where I saw a game that I thought I was going to play and enjoy, and I absolutely did. That everything turned out great that time. looking forward in the itinerary, someone has bolded Various Daylife, which I remember making fun of a lot.
I was laughing at Various Daylife, one of the many Square Enix games where they just gave it a title that describes it. It was like part of a lineage because they were doing Octopath Traveler and then Triangle Strategy and then Various Daylife. And then I saw a game this week that I'm going to send to you now. Take a look at this game. It's spreading.
No.
It's not spreading. No. This is an indie game called Septeroad Voyager.
That's the same.
Is it intentionally parodic?
I don't think it's meant to be parody so much as it is they liked that other thing and they wanted to make their own.
Okay.
The 30 seconds of video I looked at looks like it's pretty earnest, but I was laughing really hard when somebody linked this the other day to me and I'm just like, oh, I'm going to show this to Ryan. And then we're like, oh, we're going to record this week. And I'm like, yes.
None of the reviews are saying that it's a joke game. Don't give this name to a real game. But I guess the like you're in the tradition of Octopath Traveler and Various Daylife where you give a completely ridiculous name to a completely self-serious game. So I guess it's on brand for whoever is ripping them off.
Yeah.
Rockwell Studios LLC.
I just was like, this is good. This is good. More games should just be silly like this.
Various Daylife is one of the best titles I've ever heard.
What if it's like really good? It kind of seemed like it was kind of cool. It had some cool stuff going on.
Could be.
Also in that direct, was this when we first found out that there was going to be Pikmin 4?
No, it famously got announced like Wii U era. But
Pikmin 4?
Pikmin 4 got announced like not that. I looked it up because I had the same question. It, like not that long after Pikmin 3 did they say they were going to make a Pikmin 4, but it like was not a real video game until like this direct.
Huh, okay. I guess we like assumed it was in development hell and never going to appear.
Yeah.
Until this direct confirmed that it was there was life in its body. Should I ramble about Pikmin 4 for a while?
I cannot stop you from doing that.
Okay, good. Pikmin 4 ended up following... Did it indeed end up following... No, not quite. Yes. Remember Paper Mario? Yeah. You had a good game to start out with. You had Thousand Year Door, a fantastic game that is fantastic because it is going even harder in the direction of Paper Mario. But when you go too far, you get Super Paper Mario, which I know lots of people like it, but, and I've never played it, but I think we can all agree, not having played it, why the people who have problems with it have those problems, because it goes too far in the direction of that ridiculousness. So Miyamoto grabs hold of his baby and he says, no, no, you go back to being a baby. And you get Paper Mario Sticker Star, where it gets simplified way down into being somehow less than the original. And unfortunately, the same thing has happened with the Pikmin series, ignoring Hey Pikmin, which is kind of the same thing as Pikmin 4, where you had a great idea, you had a development on that idea that was fantastic, Pikmin 2 is amazing, and then Pikmin 3, the fact that you, like, Pikmin 1 has one playable character, Pikmin 2 has you controlling two people at the same time, and then in Pikmin 3 you end up controlling three people at the same time. The obvious joke is that you'd control four people in Pikmin 4, but the deeper truth is that Pikmin 3 is too much, it needs to be reined in, and you get Pikmin 4, which I will now start talking about. They made it a baby game. They made it too easy, too simple. They really, like, they had to reboot the whole story, so now it's like Pikmin 1 through 3 didn't really happen exactly. And it was disappointing in terms of being, like, kind of dumbed down. And it was disappointing in that this dog, this Ochi dog, they overtuned the utility of this dog. And they kept telling you, upgrade your dog. And the dog becomes so overpowered that, again, the game becomes too easy. Which is not to say that, like, there's no challenge in Pikmin 4. There's plenty of, like, ridiculous extra stuff and neat challenges. But the overall impression is that I'm being talked down to throughout the game, I think. And I guess I should give the caveat that this is my half-remembered impressions of Pikmin 4 after... how many years ago did I play it and finish it? And I was like, wow, that wasn't exactly what I wanted. So maybe I should have looked back at Pikmin 4 before making all these pronouncements.
Oh, that's
but
fine.
Zach, did I hear you try to disagree with me on my podcast?
Did I? When?
Oh, I thought you said, nah, like, it wasn't really that easy.
Which one?
Oh,
I didn't play
Pikmin 4.
I didn't play Pikmin 4. I have no ground to stand on here.
Different people can have different experiences.
I think I might have said, aw, as if I'm, like, sad for you that, like, it was it did not exceed your expectations.
That's like, if I wrote what I really thought about Pikmin 4, if I took the time to give it a fair shake and remember all the stuff that I really thought and lay it all out in a fair way, you would still come out with the overall impression that I didn't like it very much. Mm. So you're not missing anything except for nuance.
Podcasts are not exactly known for nuance in
that's true.
So Ryan, but that was not your favorite game of this direct.
No, not my favorite game of this direct. Because my favorite game of this direct was, well, do you want to say it?
Well, of course, it's Romancing Saga, obviously. Minstrel Song, specifically.
Well, and specifically the remastered version. Because it's very difficult for me to keep this joke up when I actually know absolutely nothing about these games.
It's a really,
like,
fun
when we talk about it in the direct, I can say, like, I remember what they said about Romancing Saga Minstrel Song Remastered, and I can latch on to that and act like those are details that I know. But the fact that there are, I had to learn from your reaction to my joke that there are multiple Saga series. Like, Romancing Saga is different from, I can't even remember the other one.
There's, oh gosh.
Saga Frontier, is that one?
That's another one. That's like the SNES era ones, I think. And then there's Final Fantasy Legends are all also Saga.
Wow.
Wow.
Weirdly, I bet there's enough of those that I bet you would like at least one of them. Which one? Oh, yeah. I don't know.
After enough jokes. No one will
ever know.
It's going to catch on.
Sarah, you're underestimating my ability to not play games.
Yeah, I guess so.
Speaking of games.
Oh, wow.
I was rewatching this and I saw the game Lego Brick Tales, which at the time I was like, oh, this looks really cute. It looks like a cute like Lego Captain Toad puzzly thing. And then I never thought about that game until I rewatched the direct 4 years later, because I've never heard anybody mention it or ever seen it in a store ever in any context whatsoever. So I actually went on Steam and looked and it was on sale. So I bought it.
Oh yeah.
It was like $7. And so I'm going to play that at some point. Cause it looks really cute. Oh,
you are going to play something.
Now, listener.
That's great news now, listener, for our listeners.
Now, listener. I'll tip my hand a little bit. We went back through all these ones, and at many points over the course of these directs, I have said into a microphone that I am going to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, I have there are many of these games that I have not actually played in the intervening years. Many I still intend to play, but what I've assembled is a sad list of games that I said I was going to play, but I have not yet.
Is it sound good?
Oh, we can't hear it, but I'm sure it's recording for you, so that's all good.
Oh, good point. It only needs to record for me.
All right.
Maybe I want to make it a little
louder. Games Zach has not played.
Hold on.
I'm holding on.
Okay. Go.
Ib. Xeno Gears. Tron Identity. We Heart Katamari Reroll plus Royal Reverie. Botan Kaitos. Professor Layton. Detective Pikachu. Dragon Quest Monsters. Penny's Big Breakaway. Super Mario Wonder and Zero Escape.
No. Now I'm gonna cry.
Oh, you're done?
That's it. It was 11 games. So drag myself here and say, no, I haven't played a lot of those games. Yeah, no. Many of them are games I still would like to play, have intentions to play. I own most of them, but no. So it goes.
That's just the way it is when you play games. You can't play them all.
Yeah.
You know what game I did play, though? Re-listening to this. Oh, we've moved forward in time, dear listener. I'm now looking at the list of games for the February 2023 Direct. That's the Direct where they announced that they were releasing a nice spiffy version of Ghost Trick, Phantom Detective.
Oh.
And that's when Sarah said, oh, I made a game based on, kind of inspired by Ghost Trick called The Good Ghost. And I was like, oh, I never did play that. So I played that this week. Hey, Sarah.
Wow.
That's a good game.
Thank you. Wow, of all the games you said you would play, I'm glad you played that one.
Hey!
I'm like, oh, I could just do that right now. Let me just play Sarah's game right now. And it's good.
Aww.
Everybody plays Sarah's game.
Done.
You just played it?
I already have.
Oh, yeah.
In the past.
Yeah, it takes a little longer than that.
I was going to play it, I think, last year when we were doing Moondrop Isle stuff. Because at one point, I was, like, ambitious. And it said, what if I get a Twine game going in Moondrop? And, like, that was not going to happen.
I had the same idea and did not do that. Being so ambitious,
play some Twine stuff, and that was on the list. Mm-hmm. And then I did not do any of that because we were too busy writing a game.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Zach and Sarah helped make a game called Moondrop Isle, which you can find at my website. And, well, we don't have time to talk about that. Well, what do we have time to talk about?
The Deca Police, apparently.
I did bold the Deca Police in the list because I remember kind of being low-key obsessed with how ridiculous it was, but I didn't say I was going to play it. I made good on my promise and did not play it or even think about it that much. And we can move on to Metroid Prime Remastered. Remember how they did Metroid Prime Remastered?
Like, in an abstract, I remembered, but I guess I hadn't really thought about it very much.
Mm-hmm.
Did you end up getting it?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. I did. I feel like I went out and got it day one. I absolutely... And, like, I'm not usually into buying a game again, but I guess, like, I don't know. I've played Metroid Prime a bunch of times. I think I played Metroid Prime Remastered like twice in a row after I got it.
Okay.
Something like I did kind of a very slow version or like a casual version, and then I tried to 100% it. Or we keep on talking about how we shouldn't do a Metroid Prime podcast. The stuff that's special and interesting about Metroid Prime, I don't think lends itself to podcasting, but like a really important and good video game.
Yeah.
That's about all you can say about it in podcast form.
I think that checks out.
Are there any other remasters you want to talk about?
We got to jump ahead to June of 2023. Because boy, listening to the arc of us talking about the Super Mario RPG remake is delightful because there's a whole second half of the story that the listener doesn't know.
Yeah, that's right.
So
this should be its own episode, the Super Mario RPG remake saga, but it's a sub episode in this one. Where did we start out?
I think we were very divided on this game, where I was instantly a hater for this thing, and I think Ryan and Sarah, you were both like open to it. You're both like, oh, okay, sure.
I think I was pretty jazzed. I don't know if I sounded that way. No, I sang a song about Culex.
You did.
yeah. So that, I was.
That says a lot.
I was like, heck yes, Super Mario RPG. I was apparently still riding the high of Metroid Prime Remastered, and I wanted to get a new version of a game that I really loved.
And
Zach, you were like, visually, your problems were mostly with the visuals, right?
Yeah, I thought the game's look didn't compete with the original weird, very era-specific look that the original had. And I decided to let that sour me on the entire endeavor, basically. And this went on for two directs. Like,
well, there was one direct where we just found out that it existed. And then in the next direct, we can go ahead, because like the topic is Super Mario RPG.
Yes.
We discovered that at least some of the script had changed. We weren't sure if they had entirely relocalized it or if they had just changed a couple details. And I was like, oh my gosh, we have to find out what they changed. Like, this is going to be interesting. This is delicious meat for the podcast fire. Throw some meat on the fire. So I was more jazzed. And how did your reaction change, or you just felt the same way?
By that point, I had already replayed the original game between directs because I had been so, like, trying to getting not quite obsessive, but getting really into trying to figure out what it is about the difference in visual style that set me off really bad. And so I was getting really, like, curious about that aspect of it. But that's also the podcast where you weren't present. That is a delightful episode, listener. If you want to listen to Ryan just get really aggravated at Sarah and I across time, highly recommend that one. That's maybe the best one we've done. Just kind of ended up very quizzical about it as we got up to the release date of that game. But also, by the time we got to the release date of that game, we kind of all collectively were like, none of us are really into this.
Well, and it didn't happen on the podcast is the thing.
Yes.
So we either have to rely on our memories or we have to go to the chat logs.
I'm not doing that.
Because we've been discussing stuff. You don't like going to chat logs?
This episode's going to be long enough as it is.
No, I mean, it would have been kind of interesting if I had bothered to check that stuff later. But basically what happened for me was, as we learned about the extent of the relocalization, I got ticked off at this game.
Oh, right.
Because, yeah, they had decided to essentially sand off all the weird edges of the extremely weird localization that Super Mario RPG initially got. And renamed a lot of characters because their names didn't make any sense. But that I was in love with how little sense they made. And in other cases, I can't figure out a good justification for why they did certain other changes. But I was like, no, man, you don't, like... What I loved about the game possibly was the verbal equivalent of what you liked so much about the visuals, is that it was so much a product of its time and had all those, the weird rough edges that made it unique and silly and cool. They made it into a 21st century game. Is a not very accurate way of putting it. But I was like, no way, man. I don't need to play this, like, smooth, like, modern version. I have Super Mario RPG in my heart. The correct old version.
Yeah. And so we were all in agreement for a time. Mm-hmm. And then the game dropped to $30 and I bought it and played all of it.
Now, and what was your opinion? Did you hate yourself for playing a game?
No, I was satiating curiosity, and it's still mostly fundamentally that game, so I had a decent time. The changes to it, the localization changes you're talking about, mostly just came from any time there's an established brand name for something. That name then supersedes the weird fake name that the original localization gave it. Mm-hmm. And it ironed out a few of the little quirks here and there. You know, you get Cinder Toad instead of Hinopio, which is a swing and a miss. The added stuff to it is kind of... it's a bunch of extra fights at the end that you can do to do the 3D. They split the difference that we were arguing about originally, where I was like, no, Keyleth has to be 2D, Keyleth has to be 3D.
No, it's amazing how we predicted exactly what they would do with Keyleth.
Yes. So it's you do the Culex fight, but then you, if you do all the other super boss fights, you get to fight the ultimate 3D Culex or whatever. So that stuff's fine. The actual cutest new stuff is stuff I didn't interact with because I believe they got back the original writer to do. There's like a bestiary you can fill by doing the Thought Peak stuff, and each one of those has a new text entry for each enemy. And I believe that's the original writer came back to write all that text, and that text is all very cute. Did solve, I think, my issue with the visuals, and mostly it's just that it's too smooth. I played two other games that have helped fix this or figure this out for me. I played a game called Another Crusade, which is a kickstarted Mario RPG like by like a single indie dev. That nails the visual style way better by looking like muddier and having everything move at like a fraction of the frame rate. Like,
cool.
The animations are so much more stiff, and that like solves like a great deal of what my problem is with it. I also played ActRaiser Renaissance, which is like the modern remake of ActRaiser, and that one has the same, it has like five different graphical styles that all mishmash and collage with each other, which is really, I was enamored with how that game looks. It's bizarre and good. But that one, when you're doing a lot of this stuff, it has 3D models, but the 3D models are like limited to only so many frames that you can see them, so it looks like it's just like a Donkey Kong Country style ACM thing where they did a 3D model and you're just seeing screenshots of that 3D model.
Cool.
And so I think that would fix it for me. Everybody in the Mario RPG Everybody in the Super Mario RPG remake moves too smooth. I think that's what breaks it for me, because the models themselves aren't bad. But that game's fine. I would still rather go play the original game. I probably will go play the original game, but not right now, because we're doing a podcast. But it was just
Doing a podcast.
It is very just funny about how much that reversed, and I'm the one that ended up playing it.
Yeah.
That's wild. Sarah, did you have any opinion at any point?
I would have also rather just played the original, but I'm glad that I feel like it's good that the remakes get new people to look at the good old games. Like, anyone playing this game is good, in my view. But I'd rather personally play the one I remember.
I like the timing better on the attacks in the original. The Switch one, it felt like the timing was off slightly, but...
Don't tell me that.
That's weird.
That's going to bug me when I'm trying to sleep tonight.
Yeah, sorry. All right, I think we're done with Mario. Oh, no, we're not. We're going to be done. We're coming back to Mario in a minute. But first...
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mario's friend, Princess Peach. Did any of us play that Princess Peach game?
No.
Nope. Said I was going to. I was very excited about it.
It looks really cute.
Yeah.
Looks really cute. Okay. Yeah, whatever.
That was also the direct where they announced Super Mario Wonder, and I said I was going to play it. I have not played it. As established by Ryan's beautiful song.
I was concentrating so hard on this piano music that I could not pay attention to what games you mentioned you hadn't played, but I suppose that's for learning later.
I did want to say that another one of these secret conversations that the three of us have off air is that we've all gotten kind of into critiquing the Nintendo Music editions every week. Because that's a very funny application that you can look at on your phone.
Yeah.
And the other week they added Super Mario Bros. 3, and I put into the chat that I'm like, I'm pretty sure Super Mario Bros. 2 is better than Super Mario Bros. 3. And Ryan was like, I don't know if you were incensed, but you were like aghast at that take.
Yeah, I can't understand that. I'm not like angry. I'm just like, how is that? That doesn't make sense.
And so rather than like get like double down on my take that I wasn't even confident in, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play those games. So I started playing original Mario Bros. Stuff again. But I haven't gotten beyond Mario Brothers original because there's a bunch of different versions of that game that I've been playing. I played original flavor Mario Bros. Or Super Mario Bros., I should say. That game's fine. You played it. You know it.
Yeah.
I played Lost Levels, which is like a fundamentally evil game. but the thing about it is modern Mario design is just there. It's like so stark going from original Super Mario Bros. To Lost Levels and just seeing how they like figured out what Mario's supposed to be at that point.
Huh.
It's wild.
I think this might be a couple steps past where this podcast is supposed to go.
Okay, but one more.
Okay.
One more step. I've been playing Super Mario Bros. Special, which is a Hudson-developed Super Mario Bros. Spin-off game built out of Super Mario Bros. For like weird Japanese computer game systems that somebody thankfully re-implemented in an NES ROM. Whatever.
Wow.
That game.
This is too far.
That game is wild because that feels like a bunch of Mario Maker levels because it feels like they just had all the toys and they just threw it all into a level and were having fun.
Wow.
That one also has like the Donkey Kong barrels and hammer in it. It's
sure
wild. Jeez. Anyways, I just wanted to say that. That game's cool.
Okay. I'm cutting you off.
All right. They're playing the music. I'm out of here. We got to get on to...
Going forward to September 2023. Oh, this is the one where I was at a cabin in the woods while you recorded. And you revealed to me... So, like, I don't know if people listening to that episode understand a very big part of its premise, where my understanding was you would watch the direct and then talk about it, and I would, instead of watching the direct myself, get my information from you and then react to that. But when you were recording, I think that you thought I had seen the direct. Because you were like, oh, Ryan's going to be excited about this. And I had to say, I don't know what it is because I haven't seen it yet. So you revealed to me that there was going to be a Wargroove 2. Now, I really liked Wargroove. And the idea of a second Wargroove is exciting to me. I never got around to playing it. I feel like I should replay Wargroove 1, which probably has plenty to offer before I get into a second Wargroove. They also announced a remake of Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. And you were like, oh, Ryan's gonna freak out. But I think that this was already long enough in the Mario RPG arc that I was like, stop touching the games that I love from when I was a kid. I like Thousand Year Door is a perfect game. Leave it alone. And again, it's like, it's great that more people are playing the game, but from what I understand, certain of the changes I don't like.
Interesting.
Like, they decided that Goombella shouldn't call anyone a floozy. And so, again, any rough edges that make things interesting, you got to get rid of those so it can be perfectly smooth.
He's not even paper anymore. He's like cardboard.
He's a shrinky dink.
Did you end up playing Unicorn Overlord?
Oh, is that in this list? Oh my gosh, how did I miss that?
Let's make this big on this list so Ryan can see this.
Yeah, jeez. Heck yes, I played Unicorn Overlord. Imagine, listener, if you haven't listened to that episode recently, imagine finding out about the game Unicorn Overlord just from the audio of people saying, and then there's a game called Unicorn Overlord. It sounds like the stupidest thing, but Unicorn Overlord is rad. I played the heck out of it. It was really satisfying a lot of my desires for tactics games that I keep bringing up on these podcasts. Fan-friggin-tastic Unicorn Overlord.
I have to say, it's a really good name. I was tempted to play it as well, but probably not my kind of game.
I could get a lot deeper into Unicorn Overlord, but this is being a very long discussion, and we should probably move on. Supplemental to this direct was, in the English version of the direct, we did not find out about the Goemon successor, Mamoru no Bakuru, and we were all like, wow, a spiritual successor to Goemon games. I played the demo, and it's like, has Goemon DNA, but is definitely not as bonkers and strange as Legend of the Mystical Ninja that we love so much for being bonkers and strange. That's the kind of lightning that you can't put in a smooth bottle because it's jagged lightning.
I'm going to play this game, but I have not done so yet. But I also did not say that on a podcast, so that doesn't count.
You just did.
Don't worry. I'm sure that won't bite, come around to bite me. We'll be fine. We're almost caught up to today. We're getting really close. We're going to jump ahead to June of 2024. Which we have... Where?
We have high what?
June of 2024.
I'm not going to be editing this podcast very carefully.
I know. It's going to make it fun. Mario and Luigi Brothership is highlighted here. I don't have an opinion on this game.
I wanted to play it, but then I think I got cold feet because I liked the original game so much, and I thought it might disappoint me.
It sounds like it disappointed a lot of people who really liked the older games.
Yeah, I don't want to be one of those people.
Really hand-holdy, from what I understand.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
You know, it was not a bummer. Why am I the one doing the transitions today? What happened?
Because when you can get in, you do those segues.
Okay.
You don't let anyone get them.
Metal Slug Attack Reloaded was a game that was featured on this direct. Ryan did not play
this. I never said I was going to play it.
That's right.
But a game that never got featured in any direct for some reason was Metal Slug Tactics. And I'm not, a Metal Slug fan. I've barely played any Metal Slug. But, of course, I love the way it looks. It's fantastic looking. And something about Metal Slug Tactics really got to me, because I want to do isometric tactics games with cool pixel art. And guess what? Here it is, Metal Slug Tactics. I finally got the game that I was wishing for over so many years and so many directs. When it came out on Switch, it was basically unplayable because all the text was too tiny to read. So I bought it day one, tried to play it day one, then waited a month or three for version 1.0.1 where they made the text more readable. And I really like Metal Slug Tactics. I still haven't played enough of it. But what a good game.
Cool. Speaking of good games.
C+.
It's an old standby. They made the Zelda game with Zelda in it. And it came out and I played it.
The Legend of Zelda: Echoes of Wisdom?
That's the one.
It's great.
It's pretty good.
It was really fun. We could talk about how it's not perfect.
It doesn't have to be perfect.
Well, it doesn't have to be perfect, but what are you going to talk about? The second half of that sentence was, we could talk about how it isn't perfect, but actually we don't have time.
I understand.
There's plenty to say about Echoes of Wisdom. But mostly what we'll say is it's really good.
It's pretty good. I had a good time. We also got the real trailer, the real first trailer for Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, but maybe we'll talk about that in a minute.
Maybe we will. Before we get to the direct that just happened, there's a note in this document that says, also, let Ryan talk about Uncharted Waters, New Horizons. This just got added to the Nintendo Switch Online SNES emulator app, and it's really neat. I didn't know this game existed. It's like Age of Sail sim, where you pick one of six characters who sails around the world, and like you explore and you buy silks and sell silks, and you have a naval fleet and stuff. It's a lot of like, it's astonishing how much it resembles the kind of game that you would daydream about existing in the 90s. And it doesn't have any right to be as good as it is. It definitely has no right to have the good writing that it has as something that got localized from Japan in 1993. I haven't played very much of it. I sailed around for a while and then there was a storm and I sank and I died. But I'm excited about Uncharted Waters, New Horizons. So are there any other games completely unrelated to Nintendo Directs that we want to bring up now?
I'm pretty spent. Sarah?
I don't think so.
Okay, then I think we can finally begin our coverage of the March 2025 Nintendo Direct. And of course we'll begin...
Switch 1 Direct.
Switch 1 Direct. Because there will be no news about the Switch 2 in this.
That's so true. Dragon Quest 1 and 2, high definition.
We discussed this a little earlier. This is the one we were talking about earlier, right?
What were we talking
about? Or did it just get... We're talking about a Dragon Quest 2D HD thing.
This has been
announced.
Is
the same thing as that?
This has been announced. Okay. This is just a better look at it.
And I hope, I'm not going to play this ever, but I hope at some point I get a chance to confirm whether they animated sprites pushing blocks or if they just have you walk into blocks as you push them.
Someone will do that work.
I will do the work of watching gameplay footage of this game to find out.
Yeah.
I won't sleep until I know whether they animated pushing the blocks.
Yeah.
And speaking of no sleep, the same thing will happen for Konami Date from AI : the Somnium Files, which is a game about a detective who needs to help some chick who's stuck in an escape room on the moon or something.
It was hard to tell.
They actually pronounced it as
dreamlike
I.
Series. Yeah, I think is it's it? I. Yeah, there's like oh, a that's whole right. I motif. Sorry. Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know much about this at all.
It's wild how much they were acting like we knew about this franchise.
I think it's pretty popular. I played a bit of the first one.
Okay.
Maybe it's not popular. Maybe it is popular among a certain, a certain fandom. The fandom.
It probably is, but like I just sometimes they say, and the best part of talking about the direct is talking about the weird way information is handled.
Yeah.
And do they expect me to know this? Do they expect me to be able to infer that? I got the feeling that they were expecting a significant portion of the audience to already know who Kaname Date is.
Yeah.
But I sure don't.
Yeah,
they also told me
a lot of people will be excited about it.
One of the things the narrator says is, "Everything you learn will bring you one step closer to the truth." Yeah. And I hope that obtains in my personal life and in all our lives, that everything we learn will bring us at least one step closer to the truth.
That's deep.
Yeah.
It is deep.
But not as deep as Atlas's backlog of games, because like I've never heard of Raido Remastered, The Mystery of the Soulless Army, which is like some Shin Megami Tensei spinoff of a spinoff.
Is that what it is? Is it a ripoff or a spinoff?
No, it's spinoff.
A remaster of a spinoff.
Because like Jack Frost is there, so it's a Shin Megami Tensei game. At heart,
and amazing. It's
like, and those are those designs. This is all of that era. This man looks like the Trauma Center man, which is my the only Shin Megami Tensei game I guess I've played.
Something where you battle demons, collect demons, use demons to fight other demons, use demons to solve puzzles. And one of them lets you read people's minds. And I'm like, heck yes, a game where you unlock the power to read people's minds. That's so cool.
Yeah, this is like, it feels like a detective-themed game, which is kind of neat.
It does seem kind of cool. Somehow this is more exciting to me than a lot of the RPG ones that they've done.
Yeah.
I like to push buttons to make my guy do an attack.
This one is set in the past, which is also interesting.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Or maybe I did and I just didn't put it in my notes.
Well,
if you don't have a segue, don't waste too much time thinking of one.
There's no segue for this one.
This is bonkers. It's a game called Shadow Labyrinth.
Sure. So far, so good.
Yeah. That's a video game name.
Sounds cool.
It's about, like, you're kind of a side-scrolling guy, and you meet an orb named Puck. And if you're watching this trailer, you're like, that looks like Pac-Man.
Uh-huh.
And it's named Puck. That's like... There's kind of a problem here, because if they're hewing too close to Pac-Man, then they're going to get sued. but it's just a yellow thing named Puck. It's just a cute little inside joke for people who remember that Pac-Man is Puck-Man. But then you like control Puck and he waka waka wakas down a line to eat some beans. And you're like, hold on, that's Pac-Man. How are they getting away with this? What is this Shadow Labyrinth peep thing? And then it gets more and more absurd and like Hollow Knight, but we're violating Pac-Man's intellectual property deeper and deeper and weirder. And then like the punchline of the trailer is, what was it? Experience a dark twist on Pac-Man.
Doesn't that just...
Like, they reveal that it's like actually licensed by the Pac-Man people or something?
Yeah, it's a Bandai Namco game. They own this.
Okay.
They're having fun with this.
They sure are. Yeah, I mean, I honestly masterful to like, I had the same journey of like, wow, that kind of looks like Pac-Man. And then like, oh, but it's not. But wait, what are those little dots that it's eating? Yeah. Wow.
I feel like they don't usually pull this off, but they pulled it off here. Good job.
Yeah.
No direct trailer ever tries to really tell a story, does it?
Yeah, yeah. It's all laid out pretty plainly, usually.
All they want to do is give you the barest hint of the theme of a game, and then tell you which of the mechanics you like are in the game, and basically tell you stuff you already know, and say, you know how you already know this, you like this? Well, here's a game that has those things. But this trailer has an arc. There's another good trailer later on in this direct. But speaking of trailers, there's also a trailer for Patapon 1 plus 2 Replay.
Yeah.
It looks Patapon looks like a cool game that somehow I didn't know.
It was on the PlayStation Portable. About. That's why you don't know about it.
I've heard the name before. And clearly the people who know about it like it because it's rad.
I played it. It's fun. It's kind of weird. This is like, there's a weird sort of trend happening where the original Patapon creator just kickstarted a spiritual successor to it called Ratatan. And in response, I guess, the original rights holders, who I forget who owns this, put out the old game. And, like, that's happened a couple times recently in a way that I'm just like, are publishers just waiting? Is this, like, what's happening first in this cycle? Because, like, it happened with, like, Suikoden, where, like, the original creator of Suikoden kickstarted Eiyuden, and then Konami was like, well, we should put out those old games, too, if they're going to make a new one.
It's like, do they see the Kickstarter as free advertising?
Probably to some extent. And, like, it's probably not bad for the new game to, like,
no,
have people talking about the old game, too. Like, it's kind of, mm-hmm. like, I don't think it's malicious. It's just a weird quirk of the way games get made these days. Or, like, mid-tier games where people use Kickstarter not necessarily as fully a funding thing, but also kind of a marketing thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Just a weird thing. And but
go ahead. It's well, like, when you say people use it as a marketing thing, like, Kickstarter doesn't want... Kickstarter isn't exactly a... The people running Kickstarter don't really want it to be a thing where a big company launches a Kickstarter just to get eyeballs on the project. They want it to actually be the indie thing of, I'm just a guy making a game. But when you get the original creator of something... saying, I'm just a guy, I'm no longer associated with Konami or whatever, and I want to make a game that looks exactly like the Castlevania games that you like. It's like, if Konami, in this example, wanted to sell a new version of Symphony of the Night, they'd be able to get around Kickstarter's policies, or, you know, by... You get that... grassroots groundswell of interest in your game without having to sacrifice your big corporation status. I don't know. There's something mm-hmm. interesting there. And you're right. I don't think it works out poorly for anyone.
No, I think everybody benefits. So it's just kind of a weird quirk of the systems that are in play.
Yeah.
You know what game probably has a lot of systems? I'm getting good at this.
And you can play it.
Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar.
Hey.
I've already forgotten everything about this
one. It's more farming stuff. What do you hear? What?
I didn't remember anything about it. This is the farming one?
Yes, it's Harvest Moon.
Okay, okay.
No, it's a Story with a bazaar. Of Seasons.
I'm sorry, it's a Story of Seasons with a bazaar.
You're selling things.
One thing that came up a lot in listening to the old ones is I keep begging somebody to please make a good YouTube video explaining all of the different Harvest Moon Story of Seasons games, and nobody's done it yet. You get some videos that, like, get almost all the way to what I want, but it's not there yet.
You know, something else we keep talking about in these direct coverage podcasts is how many games have farming in them. But when we get to this direct, I think there's only two games with farming. Two games that definitely have farming and a couple that might. What happened here? Something's wrong with my notes.
Something's wrong with the notes.
I couldn't scroll all the way down to the bottom to see if they if there were more farming games. Were they saying this is a remake? Grand Bazaar?
Maybe. I couldn't parse if it was or not.
Oh my gosh. Bad job. You're supposed to be able to tell whether it's a new one.
There's also
a no, they said something like it was on the DS before, I think.
Okay. I believe you. Can I also say that this direct has a thing happening that I don't remember happening in other directs where, like, after every trailer almost, they bring Takahashi out so he can recap the trailer you just watched.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a typical Nintendo thing, but I don't remember it being as constant as it was in this one.
It's egregious this time in a way that I'm like, what's going on? Are we padding this? You don't have to pad it.
We might be padding this.
You can just make it 20 minutes. It's fine.
No, because remember how they said it would be about 30 minutes and then it ended up being 36 minutes long? What?
Go ahead.
I think they have, a secret little smile when they're able to say, oh, we'll say it's 30 minutes and then it'll be 36 minutes. They'll eat that up. and then the way they do that is by having Takahashi tell us what we just saw.
Yeah.
Sometimes with the exact same clips in the exact same order.
Yeah.
One more thing I wanted to say about Harvest Moon is, as I'm watching this, I'm remembering how much I complained about farming games in previous direct coverage. And as I see, not the farming, but just the life sim stuff in this one, I'm like, maybe I am ready for another kind of close to Harvest Moon game. I don't want to farm on a grid, but there are certain things I do want to do. I like crafting stuff. And then I kind of trail off.
Too bad. You don't get to do any of that, because now we got to talk about Metroid Prime 4 Beyond.
Okay.
We have a real trailer for this video game.
We have a different narrator.
I don't like this narrator.
I didn't like him either. Very odd to bring in a different narrator in the first place. But yeah, he kind of hasn't mastered the being ominous and dramatic without also sounding kind of fake and dumb. Do you agree?
I think so. I feel like they're doing a bad job of showing this game off. Despite the fact that it's a game I can look at and be like, oh, I'm going to play that and I'm going to have a good time with that.
Yeah, they don't have to try very hard. People are going to play it.
I guess you're right.
Oh, okay. So they gave this to the really cheap trailer producers?
Yeah, it makes sense.
I guess that's what happened. Samus is on the planet Vuros. And I was really proud of myself for noticing when they show off that there's a scan visor, that I read the words psychic mode, and I'm like, oh, there's psychic mode in this game. It turns out it says psychic moat, but there sure is psychic stuff in this game. Samus is going to gain a crystal in her forehead that gives her psychic powers.
Wow.
Psychic powers that you can use to do stuff like open doors.
So convenient.
And solve puzzles.
And do weird little motion control-y things that I'm excited for.
Motion control-y things. It's weird because we're so many years past the age of motion control. But now we can see very directly how incorporating a motion control-like thing is what you need in order to add a certain type of mist-like puzzle. Because this is definitely Samus does mist.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure it's Samus.
I hadn't thought of it in terms of that, but I hope that's the case. Mist is great.
I think that's what's going on. A lot
more aliens.
And speaking of aliens, how about voice acting in a conlang?
I love it.
When we covered Metroid Dread, the hearing Chozo language that they made up for Metroid Dread. Oh my gosh, I'm salivating. And now we're going to hear the language of some weird other type alien. The best. Awesome.
Yeah, it's always good. It's always good every time.
And then they, they finish the trailer, and then they have, one more thing. And we have a cinematic of someone in a dark suit. And I'm like, oh no, is Dark Samus back? But no, it's just Samus in a cool new suit. So that's fine. However, speaking of Dark Samus, when the narrator said something about blah, 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 adventure, blah, 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 mystery, blah, 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 across space and time, I'm like, wait, if there's time travel in this game and they use that to bring back Dark Samus, I can be okay with that.
Hmm.
I can be okay with that. Now that I say it out loud, that sounds absolutely asinine. But put like actual time travel mechanics in the Metroid game and I'll let you get away with a lot.
Yeah. I'm down. Whatever this game wants to do, I'm ready for it. It's time. It's been long enough. Thank you for thank you for being in development hell, Metroid Prime 4. I'm ready for you now.
But what I'm afraid is not long enough is Disney Villains Cursed Cafe, which is some kind of like visual novel where you make coffee for Disney villains. At first blush, I was like, oh no, I like this. But fortunately, the glamour dissipated. And I'm like, oh no, I don't like this game. The problem with a visual novel style is that lack of animation and that presentation through text boxes for everything. And I, please don't hate me for saying this. This is just my dumb personal perspective. It always makes the game look cheap.
Well, it seemed like it was all like the same background because you're working at a cafe or a potion shop. And so how different could it get if you're just like there's different people coming in and then different dialogue?
Yeah. It does not inspire confidence. I guess I really like the idea of interact with Disney villains, but I don't have a taste, I guess you say, for the presentation of visual novels in this way.
Okay.
And so
interesting. I'm gonna buy this for my mom.
I'm sorry to everyone listening.
My mom's gonna play this. She will love this.
That's cool.
But she probably won't. Well, you know what? Maybe she would be into the next game. She's pretty gamer moded these days. Hey, remember that video game that everybody liked? I forgot what it's called. I can't do this bit because I forgot the name of Stardew Valley.
I remember that one.
Sure.
Well, their other game finally has a trailer and like a release window. It's Witchbrook.
And it's Hogwarts Harvest Moon. Moon.
Hmm.
I guess that makes it a Rune Factory, probably.
Hogwarts Moon. It's not Rune Factory, though, because I don't think you're going to fight any slimes in this.
Oh, I forgot that Rune Factory has combat.
No, this is definitely way deep in the cozy side of being a wizard. Deeply cozy. And for a second, I was like, is this the little simmy thing, farmer but not farmer thing that I want? But no, it's not.
The part that caught my ear was that you can get a part-time job to try to earn money to pay your tuition. And that's when I was like, is this a cozy game? Because that doesn't sound very cozy. It sounds a little...
Can I go off on a rant?
Yeah.
On this podcast?
Well, I'm going to go way far afield of talking about Witchbrook. That's a common concern with cozy games is like, are you going to make me countenance the unpleasant real life problems of like debt?
Uh-huh.
And the thing is, I feel like in Animal Crossing, in Stardew Valley, the fact that you have a debt that you can pay off as slow as you want and there is no interest on it, it gives the game the kind of like focus, the goal that I need, without actually being stressful, because it's, you know, quote unquote debt, but like Tom Nook is not actually going to care if you never pay off your house. But it gives me like something to work toward. Whereas after you pay off your house in Animal Crossing, after you like establish yourself financially in Stardew Valley, for me, there ends up being less to do in that game. I'm like, now I have to come up with my own goals and like, and I know it's a personal playstyle thing because other people, like, that's when the game starts for them. So they can build the really wild, like, incredibly detailed factory of a farm that they make in Stardew Valley. That's cool, but I can't get motivated by that in the same way that I can get motivated by, hey, you need to pay off 1 million bells eventually.
That makes sense.
Similarly, I'm going to go off on a further tangent because no one's stopping me. I really want the Happy Home Designer elements of that 3DS game and of Animal Crossing New Horizons. I wish those would, at least in some mode, impose a budget on you. I think it would be really interesting for the game to keep track of how much I'm spending on this vacation home and say, uh-oh, you need to get rid of something because we only have this many bells. So, returning to the point of the podcast, the eternal life of Goldman.
I didn't internalize it's some kind much. Of
Hollow Knight thing.
Is it?
I think it's like essentially ripping off Hollow Knight in that it's kind of Metroidvania-y, but with the focus on like bouncing off of enemies and that kind of like do a good job of platforming in a like balletic way.
Sarah, have you played Hollow Knight?
I see this as a Hollow Knight.
No.
Me neither. Is Hollow Knight like influential enough that now it's kind of entered like the coda of what people use to like describe games in this way?
I feel like it has.
My notes for this direct say, under Eternal Life of Goldman, it's weird how Hollow Knight is a genre, and I think that is the case.
Yeah, I guess.
There's plenty of games that are definitely like, oh, that's what they're doing. That's where they started out. There are a few games where it's like, this is just a Hollow Knight clone with nothing of its own to say. And then there are games that, you know, will get further and further afield of that. But I think you like if you're discussing the eternal life of Goldman and really getting into it and understanding it, then you need to understand that it's Hollow Knight to an extent. It's very interesting how certain games, because like all games are influenced by other games
for sure,
but it's weird how they pick which ones get to be the paradigm examples of genres or formats that go on to spawn immense franchises like Gradius Origins, a collection of Gradius games.
And Gradius E games.
I'm kind of more of an archetype person.
When games rip off R-Type, are they called R-Type likes? Or just R-Type types?
No, they're Image Fighters.
Oh. What does that mean?
Because Image Fight is the game that preceded R-Type, and I'm making a joke that I know what... It took me a second to come up with that joke, but we got there.
And the listener, because I'm not editing this, gets to find out exactly how long it took you to think of it. Whereas normally on podcasts, I like to cut down dead air to make it sound like people are coming up with jokes a lot faster, but not this time.
You know what's coming fast, though?
Hey!
Those, like, monsters or beats? I don't know what's happening in Rift of the Necrodancer.
It's like a DDR thing. But with all the characters you love from Rift of the Necrodancer, and with minigames that kind of look like Rhythm Heaven things, but they really make it look like, even in the trailer, I'm like, not enough of this game is like Rhythm Heaven. I don't just want to do a DDR track. I love Crypt of the Necrodancer so much. And I love Cadence of Hyrule so much. And it's wild to me that they would be like, okay, well, our sequel to Crypt of the Necrodancer will not have any of the like dungeon crawling roguelike gameplay. It's just going to be the rhythm part. And I'm like, there's no way that convinces me to buy the game. Mm-hmm. I want to be in a dungeon. I want to equip a sword to a beat.
Well, no swords allowed. Sorry to say.
Not even a shovel.
Not even a shovel. no segue can get us to Tamagotchi.
I had a segue almost.
Oh. Cut you off.
It was going to take a while, but we were going to get a shovel, even though we said no shovel. And we were going to go out and we were going to dig up an old virtual pet.
Hmm.
And then we'd find out that there was a home for that virtual pet in Tamagotchi Plaza, which, what the heck? What's going on?
I don't know.
I know I'm out of touch, but this seems like super left field. It's some kind of, it's about Tamagotchis. And you do jobs for them. And it's a very casual, like, just goof around with some monster creatures. You're not really going to raise any pets in this, are you? It's wild that, you know, you'd think this franchise has put so much work into teaching you how to raise little monsters that they would make that into the new game. But I guess they wanted to go in a different direction. There's another franchise that has done a lot of work into raising little monsters, and it's called the Pokemon franchise. Mm-hmm. This game coming up called Pokemon Legends ZA.
It's about pizza. They're running a pizza parlor. It's Pokemon Legends.
That sounds good. Like,
I'm basically finished with main series Pokemon and even this Legends ZA stuff, like the Legends games. I'm not going to play this at all. But like, I can tell what people are going to dislike about this.
Which
I guess I should be sad about.
I think a lot of people, because that other Legends game was like a period piece, right?
Yeah.
I thought when they announced the Paris one, it might also be a period piece. And I'm like, are we getting French Revolution Pokemon? That sounds awesome.
Sorry to blow out the mic at Zach's completely ridiculous suggestion.
Okay, but imagine how cool that would be.
Yeah, imagine.
Any sort of period piece, you don't have to go to the Reign of Terror to find a good part of French history to make a game about.
But it all goes great this time. Marie Antoinette just, like, you know, she says, I'm sorry, and everybody forgives her, and Snorlax is there.
Yeah, with his head. No, this is like a sequel to the game that already took place in Pokemon France, and so we're getting back those characters that you love. And so it's not being as creative as it could be. And it has the cool image of running across the rooftops of Gay Paris to find Pokemon, and then you jump down. But unfortunately, the way you get up onto a rooftop is you stand on a teleporter that sends you to the rooftop. I really hope that's one of the things that gets changed in the final version, and it's just in the development version. They don't have anything better than a stupid teleporter to the top of a building. But I'm not getting my hopes up. I got my hopes up for a second when they said, but at nighttime, it's different. And I'm like, oh no, is this Deadly Premonition where if you stay out too late in Pokemon, then like demons appear and like it's dangerous to be out at night? No, it's just that that's when people have trainer battles, basically.
Yeah, it's almost edgy.
It's it walks right up in so many ways, right up to the edge of having an interesting idea.
Yeah.
And we know there are mega evolutions in this one. I'm pretty sure we have not revealed any new mega evolutions in this one. In fact, I feel like the final shot of the trailer is there is a Pokemon trainer and there is Lucario and there's like mega energy off to the side. So some mega evolution is happening just out of frame. I'm excited for this game to have new Mega Evolutions because then they're going to want to put those new Mega Evolutions in Pokemon Go, which I do play.
Good. Yeah. I'm all Pokemon'd out myself.
I said earlier that there was another good trailer in this. And the trailer I was referring to was the trailer for Rhythm Heaven Groove, where in a super fun way, they explain to you in like, you are a idiot baby who's never played a video game style, but still like really entertaining. They say, here's how Rhythm Heaven works. To know when to hit the button, there's music. And then there's music and it's rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
So cool. Really, really good trailer. I have not played a Rhythm Heaven game, but whenever I see footage from one, I'm like, wow, they did such a good job. Like, this is fantastic. And it's such a great idea that could only exist as a video game. Amazing.
I'm staring at the trailer now and just entranced. I was like, yeah, this looks good. This looks really good.
Well, if you're excited about gameplay footage and you want to learn more about upcoming cool games, I have bad news about you because next we have an announcement about the use of digital games on your system.
Yeah, you can. The family sharing exists now or will exist. Like next week, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a smart thing to get ahead of when you're about to announce a new console and you're wondering, mm-hmm. can I play Mario Maker on that thing? I bought that digitally. And the answer is yes. Yes, you can. Probably.
Okay. Then there's a sizzle reel. Quick hits.
I have no opinion on any of these games, I think.
Yeah, these were too fast.
Too fast. Barely anything except, oh, there's a visual style I kind of like. There's a visual style I don't like. There's a visual style I kind of like. The only thing that gave any indication of...
I want to know which one... I need a thumbs up and thumbs down about the visual style from both of you as I say each game.
Oh, okay. Well, wait.
I should get out of this and say that I can't remember, so you should...
Yeah, maybe we should pull up the video so we should...
That's a good idea.
Okay, hold on. I'm making, sorry, listeners.
I thought I was going to make the scissor roll faster by doing it that, and then no, I made it worse.
No, but we want to actually say something meaningful. So, all right, get to the part where High on Life. Oh, Zach, you're saying
High on Life. Thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down.
Yeah.
Sarah.
It's fine. Okay. No thumbs.
No thumbs. A Star Overdrive.
Thumbs sideways.
Yeah.
Also thumbs sideways.
Part of it is looking unfinished, honestly.
Wandering Village.
Thumbs up. Like, this is the one that actually did something interesting by showing me that the village is on the back of a big dinosaur. Like, that's an interesting idea noise.
So we skipped one.
No, we didn't. Did we? So High on Life, Star Overdrive, Wandering
Village. Also, the heck, There's a frame in the Wandering Village thing where, like, that looks like a Bug Fables character. Is this Bug Fables? Is Bug Fables Wandering Village now?
Who's the dev? I don't know the dev's name. Let's see. Stray Fawn Studio. I don't think that's not Bug Fables.
Okay.
Maybe King, it's Hollow Knight. King of Meat.
Thumbs down on the title.
Yeah.
Thumbs don't care on the visuals.
Lose Lagoon.
Thumb sideways.
I can't tell what kind of game this is.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
Fantasy Life I, the girl who steals time.
I have a weird, like, fondness for this game, just because we've talked about how dumb it is on, or how dumb it seems, on previous direct coverage. I do not care at all.
I think it's cute.
There you go. All right, sizzle reel over. Now we got to talk about Ryan's favorite series.
Oh my gosh. I am so thrilled with Saga Frontier 2 Remastered. And because I just watched the direct, I actually have stuff to say about it. For example, I love how the text boxes kind of cover up whoever is talking. I love how there is pixel art sprites on top of hand-drawn backgrounds that don't have like the same color grading, and so the people all look washed out and the backgrounds look all vibrant and they don't match at all. And the best part, my favorite part, which I'm not sure is real, but it sure looked that way when I was watching the direct the first time, is that sometimes a pixel art character will be holding a pixel art weapon, and the pixel art weapon will rotate so it's not on the same pixel grid as the character holding it. And so you're just throwing, like, making completely obvious how this isn't really pixel art exactly. It's just pixels doing what hand-drawn sprites or some other sprites could have done and looked better doing. And it's like you just don't care or understand what makes it look good. So while you guys are playing Marvel Cosmic Invasion and everybody's golf hotshots, I'll be deep in a Saga Frontier Remastered hole.
Wow.
Never playing any other game for the next 500 years.
We can just stop here, I guess.
We can't stop here. We gotta go to Monument Valley Trilogy, I guess?
I guess.
Trilogy, apparently.
Or the first two and then the third one. As they presented it.
Yeah.
I think the third one must be a new announcement.
Yeah, yeah.
I've not played these.
I haven't played all the way through them. Like, how big are the first two?
The first one is
I always got the impression. Okay. Yeah, just the fact that it was a phone game in the early era of phone games. My impression is that the first two Monument Valley games are very good, obviously very pretty, but not super substantial. Like, there might be 20 or 40 levels
that are each like one screen. Yeah, that was my impression of the first one.
Monument Valley 3 is probably also good. It looks as pretty as the other ones.
Yeah.
More of the Monument Valleys that you love. And you know what else I love?
Golf?
Specifically, like, a chick in a bare midriff school uniform golfing and executing a power with a golf club to, like, spend magic energy to. Apparently, the Everybody's Golf series is very well established on PlayStation consoles.
I believe that's true. And it's also
there's been tons of Everybody's Golf games.
It's also at various times also been called Hot Shots Golf. So we've got a funny name combination where they're like, it's Everybody's Golf Hot Shots. We're just going to put both names in this thing. Figure
it out. Oh, is that what's going on? Okay. Yeah.
It kind of works.
I can't get over Everybody's Golf. There's a joke that I like to do whenever there is an apostrophe S that I try to misinterpret it as a contraction of whatever is, like Bram Stoker is Dracula. And when you say everybody is golf hotshots, that's too good. That's perfect, actually.
Maybe that is the real name.
Maybe it is. It's not.
Marvel Cosmic Invasion is getting in the way of the segue. This is by the same folks that made that recent Ninja Turtles beat 'em up that I liked. And it's got the same, it's definitely a T. Lopez soundtrack, and I like his music. So,
their music. It's Dotemu, the Ninja Turtles people, also the Metal Slug Tactics people.
Probably. I think they might be a more of a publisher. There's a lot of smaller devs that work through them, I think, or something like that.
Something like that. But, like, for whatever reason, they get attached to the games with the fantastic pixel art. And the pixel art here, I was like, oh, this is the Ninja Turtles people, and they did a great job again.
Yeah.
And you got, like, you do a beat 'em up with Marvel characters instead of Turtles. Great.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then one more game announcement.
One more game announcement. Which we should let Sarah talk about, right?
Yeah, I could talk about this one. This is Tomodachi Life, Living the Dream. Which I... this is the one I'm excited about. I don't know how you knew that. I loved Miitomo. I was obsessed with Miitomo, the app from, what, like 8 years ago?
Oh, don't say that.
Yeah, it feels like yesterday. I still think about it. But this feels like it has a lot in common with Miitomo. And it really, the trailer didn't really say much. It just had some like weird gags in it. But I would like to know more about what it's going to turn out to be. So if it has anything in common with Miitomo, I will play it.
I was like, oh gosh, wow, cool, Tomodachi stuff. And then, like, on reflection, I have no idea what you do in this game.
Yeah. I didn't play, like, there was one other game? One other Tomodachi Life game? Or two?
I don't know.
I wasn't aware of it until I started playing Miitomo.
There is one actual Tomodachi Life game for the 3DS, and there's a bunch of, like, periphery ones. There's, like, they put one out on the Switch where it's, like, a Mii RPG or something.
Wow. My understanding... Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I didn't expect to enjoy, like, a game based on the characters you make to look like yourself on a Nintendo console or something like that. But they're just so quirky and weird. I enjoy them.
And I think the point of the original Tomodachi game was, like, basically make some Miis and then drop them into a dollhouse sort of thing and then watch them interact in funny ways. And so it may be the case that you don't actually do much in this game except for allow funny interactions to happen.
I think that's what it is.
The real important thing for me would be multiplayer stuff, because that was what was good about Miitomo. And so if this is just a game you play by yourself, that's a totally different thing.
Okay.
They could just put that in there. It could just be like that original game, but it's like, hey, remember Miitomo? We're also putting that in here as a feature. Yeah,
why not do both?
That would slot in really easily and give a lot of...
like, I don't know, though. Because, like, Miitomo was its whole own app.
Yeah.
And for Nintendo to just put out its whole own app seems kind of dot, dot, dot.
I'm going to fight you. I didn't catch on to the fact that you were segueing to the next thing.
They tried.
Miyamoto has an announcement for us.
When he came out and started talking about directs, I'm like, oh no, are we done with directs? Is he about to cancel directs forever? Like, the tone that he's, like, talking about it, he's like, we all love Nintendo Directs here. It's been really useful for us for a long time. And I'm like, oh no, is this it? Yeah. Is this it?
I had the same thought for, like, a millisecond.
Yeah. Are we done? No, we're not done. We're only getting started. Because now, Nintendo is on your telephone.
Again. So how are you enjoying the app so far?
It's like, it's basically what it looks like. There's very little to enjoy. It's cool that you can set a theme. I have it set to the Animal Crossing theme. There isn't a Metroid theme yet.
Oh, what's the point?
Yeah. The worldwide release date of the... Is this new?
Oh, I stuck that in there.
I think I'm getting new.
I stuck something in.
What is this? The Legend of Zelda... The live-action film of The Legend of Zelda will be released worldwide on 26 March 2027. So I'm getting some Nintendo news from an app on my phone specifically for delivering Nintendo news. And, neat. I'm glad that I downloaded this app so I get to find out a neat Nintendo thing in a context that Nintendo can control. On Twitter, you have a bunch of Twitter users reacting to your news. On YouTube, you have a bunch of YouTube users reacting to your news. No matter where you put your news on the internet, there's always other people sticking their grimy little fingers into it, but not on the Nintendo app. That's just all, the only person who gets to talk is Mr. Nintendo.
Is there... I don't have this application yet. Do you think this is somewhere that you will be able to post screenshots to now that you can't do that to anywhere anymore on the Switch?
No.
No?
I can't post anything to this.
Okay. I was trying to figure that out. I'm like, is this something that they're going to use to replace that? Because I know, like, suddenly it became very hard to get screenshots off of your Switch. But apparently not. Okay.
Now so it's just to entertain and inform you.
Yeah.
I love to be entertained and informed.
Yeah, it's fine.
So if I scroll down, there's the Rhythm Paradise Groove trailer. There's Pokemon Legends. Then there's a short movie about Super Mario Brothers Wonder. That's just an ad for Super Mario Brothers Wonder, I guess. And then Super Mario Power-Ups Illustrated. So I can click on this and learn about Fire Mario. Pick up a fire flower to transform into Fire Mario. Oh. I'm getting Nintendo news on my phone. Throw fireballs to attack enemies. Fireballs can be thrown underwater, too. And then at the very bottom... Oh, wait. Is this reactions? it says there's... So it has a readout, and I saw this on something else where it says... It says 16% useful, 6% funny, 71% cool, and 7% cute.
What?
Now, can I tap on this? Yeah, okay. I can tap on these reactions and... vote whether I think it's useful, funny, cool, or cute.
No, you should be able to throw a fireball. Or, like, give it a star.
That is cool.
But there's no yeah option, is there?
It's not yeah. It's just one. Can I even do more than one of those four, or do I have to pick? Hold on. I have to pick one. So I'm going to say it's cool. Because it's not funny or cute. It's kind of useful. No, this is like extremely stupid and useless. No one should be especially impressed with this app that I can't remember the name of, but I'm weirdly glad it's there.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
I dig it.
I don't. Ha ha ha.
Whoa.
I did throw an extra here at the bottom. The Japanese stream got a new Super Robot Wars game that will come out in English, they've said. It just wasn't in the English direct for some reason.
Because that would have made it too many minutes.
It would have hit 40. No good there.
No good there.
Well, that's the end of the podcast.
Yep.
Probably? Question mark?
Well, okay. in a few days, there's going to be a direct about the Switch 2. And I'm sure we'll all watch the direct. And it'll probably have something fun to talk about in it. And it will probably take us less than 100 minutes to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Is that a challenge?
It's a threat. I hope we get to talk about the Switch 2 Direct.